Have you ever noticed how some products just work flawlessly? Or maybe how certain businesses seem to run like these perfectly oiled machines while others just constantly stumble?
Yeah.
It almost feels like magic sometimes, doesn't it? But, you know, behind that smooth operation, there's rarely actual magic. It's usually meticulously crafted strategy.
Absolutely. Hard work and smart thinking.
Exactly. Today, we're pulling back the curtain, taking a deep dive into two incredibly powerful and really interconnected forces shaping how businesses operate worldwide: lean production and quality management.
Two huge topics.
Huge. And our mission for this deep dive is to, well, shortcut your way to being really well informed. We want to unpack how organizations meticulously strip away waste, boost their efficiency, and crucially ensure their products and services consistently hit the mark and genuinely delight you, the customer.
Right, delivering that value.
We'll explore the core principles, look at the practical methods, and even touch on some maybe surprising connections to sustainability. And we're drawing all of this from a really comprehensive source that covers, you know, everything from the basic definitions right down to the nitty-gritty of how it's implemented and what impact it has.
Sound good.
Okay, so let's start with lean production. When we hear lean, it often makes us think of like fitness or just being generally efficient. But in a business context, what exactly is lean production trying to achieve? Why is it such a big deal?
It's a great place to start because the core, really the heart of lean production, is this systematic, relentless focus on eliminating waste, or Muda, as it's known in Japanese. Yeah. It's fundamentally about doing more with less, always. Imagine, if you will, a company where every single resource, every minute, every bit of material, every person's effort is optimized to add the maximum possible value for the customer.
That's the ideal scenario.
That's the ideal. And the immediate payoffs are pretty clear. Significantly reduced costs, improved productivity, and almost as a natural byproduct, higher product quality. It's really about stripping away anything, anything that doesn't directly contribute to what the customer actually values.
Waste feels like a really broad term, though. In this lean philosophy, what kind of specific waste are we really zeroing in on? Because, yeah, it feels like it could be almost anything that isn't perfect.
You're right, it can seem broad, but it's actually quite specific. And once you start seeing it, you tend to see it everywhere. We often use a memorable acronym, OTHER, to categorize the main types of waste lean targets.
Other. Okay, let's break that down.
Right, so the O is for overproduction. Making more than demand actually requires, it sounds, counterintuitive maybe, but producing too much too early is a huge hidden cost. It ties up capital storage space.
Like cooking way too much food for a party.
Exactly. Like cooking a banquet for 50 when only 20 show up a lot just goes to waste. Then T is for transportation. That's excessive movement of goods that adds zero value. Picture materials being shuffled between different warehouses or production lines,
So I'm
unnecessary.
moving stuff around for no good
Pretty
reason.
much. H is for handling, which is slightly different. It's unnecessary movement or manipulation of items within a single workstation, like a worker having to constantly reach across their body for a tool that could be closer. Small things, but they add up.
Okay.
E is for excess inventory, storing large quantities that might become obsolete or just sit there, tying up cash. And finally, R is for rework. That's correcting defective products or errors.
Fixing mistakes.
Right. And this isn't just wasted time. It often means using more materials, more energy, more labor to fix something that ideally should have been right the first time. The whole goal is to spot these and, well, ruthlessly eliminate them.
It's fascinating how much waste can just hide in plain sight like that. So, what are the core principles guiding this whole philosophy then? It sounds like there's a really deep-seated mindset behind it all.
Oh, absolutely. It's more than just techniques. It's a profound cultural shift. Beyond just cutting that waste we talked about, the core principles include things like a right first-time approach.
Getting it right from the start.
Exactly. Aiming for zero defects from the outset. Now imagine building a car where every single component is perfect the first time, every single time.
Oh.
Think of the monumental amounts of rework that saves down the line.
Yeah, huge.
We also see a strong emphasis on flexibility. That means the ability to adapt quickly to changes in customer demand or product specifications without, missing a beat.
Being nimble.
Very nimble. But perhaps the most enduring principle, the one people often associate most with lean, is continuous improvement, or Kaizen in Japanese.
Kaizen, I've heard that term.
Right. And this isn't usually about grand revolutionary changes overnight. It's about small, ongoing enhancements in every single area, involving everyone. It's like sharpening a pencil just a little bit every day. Eventually, you have a perfectly honed tool. It's that constant refinement.
Okay, that brings us neatly to the practical side. How do companies actually do this? How do they put these lean principles into practice on the ground? What are some key methods?
Well, two methods really stand out as embodying the lean philosophy. First, that continuous improvement, or Kaizen, we just mentioned. It isn't just a principle, it's a core method.
Oh, okay.
It involves empowering employees at all levels, literally from the factory floor right up to the executive suite, to constantly identify small incremental improvements. What's often overlooked, I think, is its impact on morale.
How so?
Well, when everyone feels they can contribute to making things better, even in small ways, it fosters this powerful sense of ownership and innovation. Plus, it's often cheaper to implement lots of small changes than one radical overhaul, and it significantly reduces long-term costs.
Makes sense. And the second method?
The second, and probably the most famous, is just-in-time, or JIT.
Right, JIT. Heard of that too. Inventory management, isn't it?
Exactly. It's a stock control method where materials are delivered exactly when they're needed for production, and then finished goods are dispatched almost immediately. No big stockpiles.
And the advantages seem obvious.
Oh, they're huge. Imagine basically eliminating storage costs for both raw materials and finished products, minimizing wastage because nothing sits around long enough to become damaged or obsolete, and dramatically improving cash flow because your capital isn't just tied up in vast piles of inventory.
That sounds incredibly efficient. Almost, well, too good to be true. I can see the gains, but what's the catch with JIT? It feels like it might be walking a bit of a tightrope.
You've hit on the main challenge immediately. JIT requires incredibly reliable suppliers.
What?
Absolutely rock-solid reliability.
Because there's no buffer.
Precisely.
Yeah.
No buffer stock. So a single geopolitical event, a natural disaster, even just a supplier's truck breaking down, any hiccup can halt an entire production line. It's not just theoretical either. We saw this acutely during the recent global supply chain disruptions, didn't we?
Yeah, definitely.
Many companies relying heavily on JIT faced significant challenges when parts simply couldn't arrive on schedule. It's also not really ideal for businesses with highly unpredictable demand because, again, there's no buffer stock to smooth out those sudden spikes or dips.
That really connects the dots there. Okay, now, if we take this whole mindset, this pursuit of efficiency, waste reduction, the lean approach, and connect it to something as critical today as sustainability, how do they intertwine? It feels like there must be a strong link.
There's an incredibly strong connection, yeah. And it brings us quite naturally to something called cradle-to-cradle design and manufacturing, or C2C.
Cradle-to-cradle. Okay, yeah. What's that about?
It's not just about recycling as we normally think of it. It's a really radical rethinking of how products are made from the very beginning. C2C is essentially a sustainable production model where products are designed with their entire life cycle in mind.
The whole journey.
The whole journey, yeah. Ensuring everything within that product can eventually be reused, fully recycled into something of equal value, or even safely regenerated back into the environment, becoming like biological nutrients. Think of it like mimicking nature's own cycles, where nothing is truly waste.
Okay, so very different from the usual model.
Completely different. It stands in stark contrast to the traditional cradle-to-grave model, right? Where products are designed often for single use and then inevitably end up as landfill waste, potentially for centuries.
Yeah, the throwaway culture.
Exactly. With C2C, you're designing out waste from the very beginning. Key features include using renewable energy in the production process, focusing on materials that can be fully recovered and reused in a new technical cycle, like, say, a carpet tile that can be returned, broken down, and turned back into new carpet tiles of the same quality.
A closed loop.
A closed loop, precisely. Or materials that can safely return to the earth. It promotes these closed loop systems. And the benefits, they extend far beyond just the environment. It can really boost a brand's reputation, build long-term resilience against resource scarcity. It's fundamentally about creating lasting value, not just minimizing harm.
Okay, so we've covered being lean, being efficient, meticulously cutting out that waste. But what about the other massive side of this coin, quality itself? How do we even define a quality product or service, especially when it can feel so subjective sometimes?
That really is the million-dollar question, isn't it? From a business perspective, quality isn't just about our personal opinion, you know. It's more defined as when a product or service consistently meets its intended purpose and thoroughly satisfies customer expectations.
Meets its purpose and satisfies the customer.
Yeah. It's really about delivering on the promise made to the user, reliably every single time. Consistency is key.
And thinking as customers now, what are those tangible things, those factors that make us personally associate something with high quality? What makes us trust one brand over another, for instance?
Well, we all have our own personal benchmarks, of course, but several factors seem to consistently emerge when you ask people. The design and physical appearance are often huge. You know, how it looks, how it feels, that initial impression it makes.
Your first impressions count.
They really do. Yeah. But then crucially, it's about reliability and durability. Does it work consistently? Will it last? Nobody wants to replace something prematurely, right?
Definitely not.
Brand image and the company's reputation also play a massive role. We tend to trust brands that have consistently delivered quality in the past. It builds that confidence. And increasingly, I think, customer service and after-sale support can truly differentiate a quality offering.
What happens after you buy it?
Exactly. Knowing you'll be supported effectively if something does go wrong is a huge part of that overall quality experience for many people.
It really feels like the bar for quality, maybe customer expectations around it, just keeps getting higher and higher. What's driving this intense focus on quality from businesses today?
It feels that way because it probably is. It's kind of a perfect storm of powerful forces pushing it up the agenda. Firstly, rising consumer awareness is massive.
We know more now.
We know so much more.
Yeah.
With instant online reviews, global information sharing, consumers are more informed and, frankly, demand more than ever before. If a product isn't up to snuff, the whole world can know about it in seconds. Secondly, increasing competition in global markets. It means quality is often a crucial differentiator. Companies can't always just compete on price anymore. They need to offer value, which includes quality.
Stand out from the crowd.
Precisely. Thirdly, you have stricter government regulations in many areas, imposing legal requirements for safety, performance, environmental impact, and so on. And finally, generally higher consumer incomes in many parts of the world mean people are often more willing and able to pay a premium for products that truly deliver on quality, not just the lowest possible cost.
So, okay, the stakes for quality are clearly very high. Given that, are there different sort of philosophical approaches to how companies actually ensure it? Does everyone tackle quality the same way?
Oh, not at all. There are fundamentally two primary approaches, you see. The, let's say, traditional method is quality control, or QC.
QC. Heard that one.
Right. This is generally a reactive approach. It often involves inspections, testing, sampling, typically at the end of the production line or maybe at key stages.
Checking the finished product.
Checking the finished product, exactly. Its main advantage is pretty clear. It stops defective products from actually reaching customers, which is obviously critical. It can also sometimes be cheaper in the short term to have a dedicated team of inspectors rather than training absolutely everyone in quality methods.
But downsides.
Yeah, the disadvantages are pretty significant, especially from a lean perspective. It's incredibly expensive to fix mistakes after they've already occurred. Think of the rework waste, and it often fails to address the root causes of the problems. It's just catching symptoms. Worse, it can sometimes foster a culture where workers might rely on the inspectors to catch errors rather than taking personal responsibility for quality themselves.
Okay, so that's QC, the reactive way. What's the alternative?
The alternative, and generally the more modern approach aligned with lean thinking, is quality assurance, or QA.
Wait.
QA is fundamentally a proactive approach.
Right.
The whole aim of QA is to build quality in from the very beginning, ensuring it at every single stage of the production process, not just checking at the end.
Preventing defects rather than finding them.
Exactly. Think of it like fire prevention. Rather than just having firefighters ready to put out fires once they start, the advantages are really compelling. It tends to improve morale because you get widespread employee involvement and empowerment. It encourages innovation, as everyone is encouraged to think about improving processes. And critically, it significantly reduces waste because defects are identified and ideally corrected much, much earlier in the process when it's cheaper and easier to do so.
That makes a lot of sense intuitively, building it in, not inspecting it out. But what are the practical challenges of actually implementing quality assurance across a company? It sounds like quite a big cultural shift.
Yeah. It absolutely is a major cultural shift, and that's the main challenge. QA requires significant investment in time, in training, in resources. Establishing a genuine, deep-rooted quality culture that permeates the entire organization, well, that could be expensive, and it absolutely demands unwavering commitment from leadership all the way down.
Not just lip service.
Not just lip service at all. It's a long-term play.
Yeah.
You don't flip a switch and have a QA culture overnight. But the long-term benefits, particularly when combined with lean, often far outweigh those initial hurdles.
Okay, so if quality assurance is all about being proactive, building quality in from the get-go, what are some of the actual methods or tools companies use to actively manage quality throughout their operations, beyond just, you know, setting the philosophy?
Right. There are several practical methods that come to mind. One great example is quality circles.
Quality circles.
Yeah. These are typically small groups of employees, often from the same work area or department, who meet regularly voluntarily to identify, analyze, and ultimately solve quality-related issues within their sphere of work.
So empowering the people doing the job.
Exactly. It really leverages the expertise of those closest to the actual work. It fosters teamwork and gives employees direct involvement in problem solving, which can be incredibly motivating.
Okay, what else?
Another crucial method is benchmarking. This involves systematically comparing your company's products, processes, or key performance indicators against, well, benchmarks. These could be market leaders, best-in-class performers in other industries, or even against your own company's historical data.
Comparing yourself to the best or your past self.
Right. We often talk about historical benchmarking, which is looking at your own past performance trends, and inter-firm benchmarking, which is comparing with competitors or other leading firms.
And the goal isn't just to copy them, presumably.
No, absolutely not. Good benchmarking isn't just about imitation. It's about understanding why the best-in-class performers excel in certain areas. What are they doing differently? Then you adapt those underlying principles to your own unique context and ideally innovate beyond them. It helps close performance gaps, identify best practices.
Yeah.
But yeah, if done superficially, just trying to copy, it can actually stifle genuine innovation and might not lead to a unique selling point.
Gotcha. So quality circles, benchmarking, any others?
And then there's the big one, really. Total Quality Management, or TQM.
PQM. That sounds comprehensive.
It is. TQM is really a holistic management philosophy. It's where the entire organization, every single person, commits to continuous quality improvement in everything they do. Crucially, it involves viewing quality primarily from the customer's perspective.
Everyone owns quality.
Everyone owns quality. It's about empowering every single employee to contribute to improving processes and outcomes for the customer.
TQM sounds almost like the ultimate goal then, this company-wide obsession with getting it right for the customer. What makes it so powerful, but also, you know, what makes it so challenging to actually implement effectively?
It's powerful precisely because it genuinely empowers employees across the board, which often leads to higher motivation, better ideas, and a strong sense of ownership. Done well, it dramatically reduces wastage and production costs by instilling that right first-time culture we talked about. It builds an incredible corporate reputation over time and provides a significant, sustainable competitive advantage. Customers learn to trust TQM-driven companies. The challenge, however, lies in its sheer scope and the depth of commitment required. The costs of training everyone and implementing the necessary systems can be very high initially. Sometimes the processes involved can feel a bit bureaucratic and might slow things down if not managed well. And it absolutely requires full, unwavering commitment from every single employee, starting at the very top. Without that, it just won't stick. Plus, the tangible results, the big payoffs, they might take years to fully materialize. So it demands real long-term vision and patience from leadership.
Okay, so bringing this all together now, lean production and TQM, or at least a strong QA focus, what does this actually mean for an organization operating in the real world? What are the practical impacts, both the fantastic wins and maybe the significant hurdles of trying to adopt both of these philosophies?
Well, if we connect these two powerful ideas, lean and quality management, the combined impact can be truly transformative. But as I said, it's definitely a marathon, not a sprint. On the positive side, the upsides are huge. You typically see significantly reduced waste and lower operational costs, which flows directly to the bottom line.
More profitable.
More profitable, more efficient. There's often a noticeable increase in employee motivation and engagement because staff are actively involved in improving how things are done, making their own jobs better, and contributing to quality.
They feel valued.
Exactly. This naturally leads to improved product or service quality and higher customer satisfaction, which in turn bolsters the company's reputation and helps foster customer loyalty. And ultimately, all these things together lead to higher overall efficiency and greater competitiveness in the marketplace. You become harder to beat.
Sounds like a winning formula. But the hurdles?
Yes. The hurdles are real and shouldn't be underestimated. As we touched on, the initial implementation and training costs for both Lean and TQM QA can be substantial. you often face significant cultural resistance from employees who might be comfortable with the old ways of working or perhaps suspicious of the changes.
Change is hard.
Change is very hard. It also takes time for the results to become visible and really pay off, so it requires patience and sustained commitment, especially from senior management. And particularly with lean systems like JIT, as we discussed, there's that heightened dependence on supplier reliability. That could be a significant vulnerability if your supply chain isn't incredibly robust and resilient.
Okay, that gives a good picture of the internal impact. Now, thinking beyond just the company's internal processes, how do things like national and international standard, you know, like ISO standards, play a role in all of this? Why are they so important for businesses that are really striving for this kind of excellence?
Oh, they're absolutely crucial in the modern global economy. These national and international quality standards, like those from ISO, provide a kind of external, objective assurance that a product, service, or even a management system consistently meets a certain set of agreed-upon requirements.
Like a stamp of approval.
Exactly. Like a recognized stamp of approval. For businesses, meeting these standards allows them to display specific logos or certifications. This significantly improves customer trust and serves as a really powerful market signal, especially in international trade or when dealing with large corporate buyers. The International Organization for Standardization, or ISO, based in Geneva, is the leading non-governmental organization that develops and publishes these widely respected international standards across nearly every industry imaginable. Think ISO 9001 for quality management, for example.
Right, ISO 9001. You see that everywhere.
You do. And the benefits of achieving that kind of accreditation are multifaceted. Internally, it really fosters a culture of quality awareness throughout the entire organization, not just on the production floor. It demonstrably helps improve operational performance by giving companies a clear, proven framework for implementing best practices. It also recognizes and rewards quality achievements internally, which can be great for motivating staff, and even helps attract skilled employees who want to work for quality-focused companies.
And externally.
Externally, as we said. These accreditations provide a powerful marketing advantage and a strong competitive edge. In a crowded global market, being able to say we are ISO 9001 certified tells potential customers our commitment to quality isn't just talk, it's independently verified and certified. It builds immediate credibility.
So, wow, we've covered a lot of ground. We've journeyed through this intricate world of lean production, really understanding how to ruthlessly cut waste and boost efficiency, and then explored the multifaceted commitment to quality management, moving from reactive control towards proactive assurance, and even that total organizational mindset of TQM. It's crystal clear these aren't just management buzzwords.
No, not at all. They're really powerful, deeply interconnected frameworks that can fundamentally transform how businesses operate. They're aiming for this sweet spot of superior efficiency, genuine sustainability, especially when you bring in ideas like C2C and consistent customer delight. But as we've definitely seen, they demand significant investment, unwavering commitment, and often a complete cultural shift to truly succeed. It's a serious undertaking.
Oh.
So maybe for you, our listeners, here's something to mull over, a provocative thought, perhaps. In a world that's increasingly striving for both ultimate efficiency and genuine deep sustainability, how might these integrated principles, lean production, quality assurance, maybe even cradle-to-cradle design, thinking how might they fundamentally reshape not just businesses, but maybe our own everyday lives and consumption habits? Could they push us all towards a more thoughtful, less wasteful future?
That's a fantastic question to end on. Thank you for joining us on this deep dive today.